It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
This is better than Joe. Good afternoon. How are you doing? 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Happy Monday. I hope you had a lovely weekend. If you are cavorting around Ireland on your holidays, how are you getting on? Where are you? What's been the best part so far? Let me know. What has been the biggest family argument? That's always a good one. And if you have decided not to go abroad this summer and are still a little bit miffed about it, I know a lot of people still up in the air, not sure whether they're getting money back, not sure what's going to be the government announcement. There is a list of reasons doing the rounds online today about why foreign holidays just aren't that great anyway. You know, why would we want to go? Including most of us aren't suited to hot weather was number one. Number two, there's a lot of stress before you can relax. You know, you've booked the flights, you've butchered your savings, you can't find the passport, then it's in date, then it's not in date. You set the alarm clock 17 times before missing the flight. You don't sleep the night before, all of that. Number three, the endless snaps for social media. Well, I think they actually happen on terra firma as well as abroad. And the world is divided into two groups of people, really. Those with enough selfies to crash Instagram. I think I probably fall into that category. And then the other half who just find it incredibly annoying. And my husband falls into that category. Travelling with children on an aeroplane. Children are wonders, we know that, but it's a brave new world walking onto a plane. And finally, number five, not having to get beach body ready. The pressure is off, lads. Forget about it. You're on an Irish beach in a pair of black jeans and a hoodie, paddling away. Nobody cares. Nobody's interested. So I don't know if that made you feel any better, but there you go. Did you have pizza over the weekend? It's always a divisive one in our house. The toppings, whether you go a deep pan or a thin crust. And it became a big thing for people in lockdown, and lots of restaurants were delivering. Some households, including my neighbour, even going as far as building his own pizza oven during lockdown. And he finally got it finished, and we're delighted now because we got the invite. We can finally come to test the fruits of his labour, so can't wait for that. But a post came up on my Instagram account last night from Brennan's Bread titled "Debate the Plate." And essentially, it was a picture of pizza toast, is what they're calling it. So it's a picture of two slices of toast dressed up as a pepperoni pizza with melted cheese and tomato and pepperoni. And basically, Brennan's were running this poll asking would people be interested in pizza toast. Now, I don't know whether this was just a general shout out or if this is a marketing, if they're trying to launch this pizza toast. Anyway, they're probably not going to now. 32% said, yes, that looks fabulous. 68% said, absolutely not. So there you go. Have you ever made pizza toast? I'd never heard of it. What's the weirdest thing you put on your toast? For me, cheese, apple and mustard. The best combination on toast to ever exist. I don't think it's that strange. And my pizza of choice is Hawaiian pizza with jalapenos and mayonnaise on the side. Which I think actually would work very well on toast. But admitting, you see, this is the problem. Admitting that you are a Hawaiian pizza lover like me, for some pizza buffs, is like admitting you've committed murder. And I can't eat any other pizza. Well, there's one other pizza that I can eat, and it's from our local pizzeria in Dublin 8. I'll give them a shout out, Rascals, because we probably did keep them in business during the weekends in lockdown. Goat's cheese, black pudding and rocket. Delicious. I also love tuna and sweet corn on pizza. Anybody else? Let me know your favourite pizza topping. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. And let me know. Keep them coming in. Ireland's first open-air drive-in mass was held this weekend. Dozens of mass goers. And we were talking about drive-in cinemas, I think it was on Friday. And loads of people flocked to St. Dominic's Church in Keena in Longford to watch and hear the first Mass in over 3 months. And it was celebrated under a gazebo. So Father Tom Barden celebrated Mass along with three ministers who brought the Holy Communion to the congregation in their cars. And it was known as the first drive-in Mass in the country. I think others then came to the table over the weekend in several different parishes. So were you at it? What was it like? Do you think it will catch on? Or would it make you more inclined to go to Mass if you can sit in comfort? possibly not have the radio on. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. That's it. I feel you just wound down the windows and listened to the service without having to tune in. So let me know if that was you and you attended a drive-in mass. Also, what happens when you cross a 90s television theme song classic with the dulcet tones of a traditional Irish folk ballad? Well, the answer is actually something quite extraordinary. I found this over the weekend. So you have Will Smith, one of the biggest movie stars on the planet right now, but he's shot to fame, and for a certain generation of fans, he'll always be the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I was a massive fan. Here's the theme song from the cult TV show.
In West Philadelphia, born and raised, on the playground is where I spent most of my days. Chilling out, maxing, relaxing, all cool and all, shooting some b-ball.
All right, there you go. Now, Crumlin-born musician Stefan Murphy is something of a cult favourite here in Ireland. He was in a band called The Mighty Steph, and he just posted a brilliantly wry cover version, it's fair to say, of the famous rap tune. Take a listen.
In West Philadelphia, I was born and raised. On the playground I spent most of my days. Chilling out, maxing, relaxing and cooling. And shooting some basketball outside the school.
I love it. It's just the delivery, and it's sung with such conviction as well. You wouldn't know he was singing about, you know, inner city life in Philadelphia playing basketball. I thought that was brilliant. Anyway, Samantha Rawson, who is our dog expert, she will be coming up later in the show as well. So if you do have any questions, and maybe you've got your dog with you on your staycation, let me know and I'll get the questions in for her. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Mushrooms, pepperoni and anchovies on pizza. That one is for me, says Aaron. Mushrooms, pepperoni and anchovies. Not so sure. Tato crisps on toast is a Cork delicacy. Yes, says Pete in Cork. Absolutely. I make pizza toasties. I've been doing this for years. I toast bread first, then add tomato paste, then cheese and toppings, and then put it all under the grill and melt it. It's very tasty. See, there you go. People have been already doing this for years. Pizza is just a large grilled sambo when you think about it. And what is that when you fold it over? That's the calzone, isn't it? I do an Hawaiian toast. It's toast with ham, pineapple and cheese from Siobhan in Selbridge. That's dinner sorted for me tonight. I'm going to give it a lash and see how I get on. Pineapple does not belong on pizza, Catherine. You see, Dave, do not send me in any of these texts. I will not have anything said about the Hawaiian pizzas. I'll just read out this one. The best is the Big Chief from Apache, which has sausage, ham and cheese. Could you give a shout out to me and my mom, Alana and Karen? We are on our way home from shopping and pennies. There you go. Well, Alana, I am happy to read out your text, but you do need to apologise about your phrase and your opinion that pineapple does not belong on pizzas. Anyway, lots more coming in, but let's get some music. This is Rag and Bone Man. That is Giant Rag and Bone Man, probably one of my favourite tunes of right now. The Hawaiian pizza supporters are coming in their droves. And behind me, Eddie in Wicklow is saying, my favourite pizza has always been Hawaiian and always will be. Can't eat a pizza without pineapple, says Sinead. So says Mary. So says Olivia. Mary in Malahide. Catherine, my friend's husband is Italian, and he said if Italians knew Irish people put pineapple on pizza, there'd be a war. There you go. That's straight from an expert. A good topping for pizza is warm brie and pear with a tomato and chili jam. Oh, coach. That's another one now for my list. Toast. We were talking about pizza toast and the fact that it is a thing for people. Somebody has said the best filling for toast has to be banana chopped, cheese and broken pieces of walnut and a glass of cold milk. Oh, that has to just sit with me for a while. Let's take a break.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We were talking about pizzas before the break and Mia has texted in. My dad used to make a pizza from the Sunday lunch leftovers. Homemade brown bread. And then he'd put butter, mushy peas and any other leftover veg, chicken, tomatoes. Topped it all with cheese. Lashed it under the grill till it melted, served with ketchup. Even typing this, I can taste and smell it. Yum. Thank you, John Carney, making pizza in heaven somewhere. Oh, that's so sweet. And it's, you know, it's a real dad thing to do, making a pizza like that, duping your children into eating leftovers and calling it pizza. I love that. Anyway, keep them coming in, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Boiled cabbage or turnip, salt and pepper and mayo on toast. Delicious. Another one, not quite sure. Anyway, both movie and music fans all over the world have been paying tribute to the late, great Ennio Morricone, who died today at the age of 91. The Italian maestro has had an extraordinary career, and it was lovely listening to people's memories and tributes to him all day. He composed the scores for over 500 movies, including The Good, The Bad and The Ugly, The Mission, Cinema Paradiso. Irish conductor and composer Eimear Noone had the pleasure of meeting with Ennio Morricone and has played his music in concert. And she joins me on the line now. Good afternoon, Eimear.
Catherine, how are you?
I'm really good. Sad day today.
We're all feeling it. I think... When for musicians and composers in particular, when we lose one of our own, especially such an iconic member of our community, it's just a really sad day, and it's resonating and reverberating around the world, let alone what fans of movie music and movies in general are feeling today. So it's a very poignant day, and we all have amazing memories of Maestro Ennio Morricone's work, and we all have experienced it in various ways. And I have to say, today my heart is definitely a little bit hurt and heavy.
Mm. You met him a couple of times.
I did. I was very lucky. I got to meet him when he was nominated for Hateful Eight. That was in 2016 for the Quentin Tarantino film. And I'm lucky that I get to see the music nominees before the Oscar ceremony, and to see him take his place standing next to John Williams and Thomas Newman, who were also nominated that year. There was definitely a feeling of, please God, let this be the year that everybody honors the great Ennio Morricone. He was about 80, in his late 80s then, in 2016. And he did. He won after six nominations, one of which was the iconic Mission score. After six nominations, he won. Mm. And Quentin Tarantino had been after him for a while, and he pretty much got into retirement in terms of film scoring. He was doing a lot of performing. But Quentin Tarantino tried to get him to score Inglourious Basterds to no avail, and then he got him to write one piece for Django Unchained. So it was hugely, part of that great director honoring a great artist that he grew up with his music in his ears and his heart, and it worked out in the most beautiful way.
And I think it was on Morning Ireland. I was listening, and they were talking about the good, the bad, the ugly, and writing the score, writing that, and the how it was written before the actors came anywhere near a set, and so they had that to work off. So it was literally, it was changing how they filmed back then as well, and so they were able to be inspired by the music, and it just set the whole tone for the movies.
Yeah, well, there's a scene in that movie, the standoff scene, or the last duel, where there's three actors looking at each other for 5 minutes, and they're just sort of pacing around each other, and you're wondering who's going to draw first, and you have this amazing Morricone music with the trumpets screaming at the top of it. He's a trumpet player, and you're wondering what's going to happen, and they're literally just looking at each other, and for a director to have silence and no action practically for 5 minutes and have the composer take center stage, and there's a moment where you think, oh my gosh, someone's going to draw, the music is getting quieter, and it stops for a breath, and then it begins again. And of course, it ends with this intense bolero that builds and builds and builds and builds and finishes with a gunshot, of course.
Mm. Well, let's take a little listen to what we do have to play, is Cinema Paradiso. So let's take a little listen to that. Yeah, it's absolutely stunning. And can I ask you, Eimear, when you played his music, like, what was that like for you? Because as a composer and as a conductor, you get to play all different types, all different genres. And what was it like playing his music?
Well, it says a lot. I think it was my very first real concert, the National Concert Hall. I was about 19 or 20. And I got to program all the music. So I had, of course, grown up. My dad was a huge Spaghetti Western fan. But one of my favorite scores of all time was The Mission. Mm. So I got to perform some of The Mission and invited the wonderful David Agnew to come and play the famous oboe solo on Gabriel's oboe from The Mission. And it's incredibly poignant. It's incredibly dramatic. And if you know the film as well, it's sort of, you know, in many ways, the beauty and the innocence and the music brings forth the poignancy of what these native peoples, you know, we're going through in the subjugation of their own culture in many ways. And it's a kind of a timeless theme, but the beauty and purity in the music just gave so much more poignancy to that. And I really wanted to program some of his music, so we did Gabriel's oboe. And being inside that with my colleagues, being inside that score in the moment, from moment to moment, it's unforgettable. Mm. I mean, he has a way of going straight, and this is going to sound saccharine, but it's just true, going straight to your heart. Mm. And that's crossing all cultural borders, all, you know, language barriers. He didn't speak very much English at all. Mm. But his music really just understood human beings, understood the drama and the pacing of a piece of music and how to draw it out in a way that could bring us on an emotional experience, an emotional journey with the piece. Mm-hmm. So it was unforgettable, you know, that music, that's an iconic theme, and I'll never forget that moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a piece from The Mission as well. It's not Gabriel's oboe, but this is another one of his pieces. It's just amazing, and you can. It's exactly that. It goes right to your heart, as you were saying, and you can just. It's visual. You can. I remember the movie so clearly when I hear that.
That piece in particular, I have to say, made a massive impact on me when I heard it, because that's the Ave Maria of the Guarani native people, and to hear their accents and their voices, they don't sound like an Anglican choir, you know, they sound like themselves, but they're having this, the way he did it showed that they were having this other complex culture foisted upon them, and you can hear it in that piece, and the purity of the composition and the purity of their voices just makes that so much more poignant. Mm. He understood these things. Mm. He understood the power of the human voice as an instrument to really get straight to other human beings, be that, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly, where you have ha, and you have these, you know, kind of vocal noises and things, or you have somebody whistling what a conventional composer would write for a violin solo, but the fact that there's a human being whistling it brings this
amazing
whole dramatic dimension that it is so imaginative and unique to him.
Absolutely. And Emer, can I ask you, because obviously, you know, how have you been during lockdown? Because we know that concerts have all been put on hold, and that's very difficult for you, not knowing what the landscape is going to look like going forward.
Mm. Well,
where are you, by the way? Are you in Ireland? You are in Ireland.
I am.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm in East Galway in Kilconnell at the moment.
Okay.
And we're lucky, coincidentally, because we came home to Ireland to work on a wonderful animated feature film by Motion Films. And we're literally just finishing that up now. But, I mean, I do 50, 60 concerts a year, and they're all postponed at least a year. Mm. One of the other heartbreaking things is choirs, even the ones that are postponed. We can't work with choir until everybody's vaccinated and so on. Mm. We did a little documentary on writing the score during COVID, because half of our score we recorded with wonderful orchestral musicians in Dublin, and we got completely cut off by COVID because we couldn't bring the orchestra into the studio after that. Mm. You can't have an orchestra where everyone's 2 meters apart. So we had to use some technology, some individual players pitched in, working this out. But it's a very painful time for musicians. So I'm so grateful to you guys for honouring one of our own today, Ennio Morricone, because losing him at a time when our art, you know, is unheard in many ways, and, you have a lot of musical families out there who are struggling and who aren't falling under the conventional sort of routes that other people are being supported by, you know. So I think it's a time to remember our artists as well, because by definition, it's the nature of artistic people to give to and serve the public. But today in particular, I think, I'm very much hurting right now, losing Ennio Morricone. But I know a lot of my colleagues around the world, and not just in Ireland, but all over the world, we're wondering, when do we get to, because we're sort of half alive if we're not sharing our art with an audience. You know, that's part of what lifts us up, and that's sort of our the way we serve our community, the way we participate. I mean, I'm looking, Ballinderry Nursing Home is right next door to me here, and I've been watching these amazing people on the front lines and feeling a little bit like, well, what can I do right now to be of help? And I'm watching these people who are, you know, carrying the burden of this right now.
And so, you know, so Eimear, that's going to stay with me. I, the fact that you guys, you're half alive as artists, that is very, it's a very powerful statement and visual to make. And it makes today a kind of a sadder day for you guys on the death of Ennio Morricone. I'm going to have to go to an ad break. Thank you so much for joining me
Catherine.
Today and continued success. And it will come right again, as they say.
It will indeed. It will. And thank you for celebrating the great Ennio Morricone today.
Great to chat to you, Eimear. Back after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, you can keep your texts coming in to 51551 and your emails to ray@rte.ie. Now, I was talking about it earlier. Many of us are on Instagram. I'm a big fan. We all have the favourite people that we like to follow. But for some, targeting people online to troll and bully is what they spend every hour of every day doing. And in recent months, there's been an increase in the number of incidences targeting Irish Instagram stars, those particularly with big followings. So to talk more about trolling, online bullying and what needs to change, which I think really is the topic of conversation, we've put together a panel. I'm joined now in studio by Grace Mongey, better known to thousands of followers as Faces by Grace. And as I said, it's lovely to see your gorgeous face in studio.
Good to be here.
Good to see you. I'm also joined from our Cork studio by Julie Haynes, whose Instagram handle is Twins and Me. How are you, Julie?
I'm good, Catherine. Thank you.
Good. And on the phone, there is Paloma Otero. Hopefully I've pronounced that right. Who's a researcher with the Anti-Bullying Research Centre in DCU. Good afternoon, Paloma.
Very good afternoon.
Thank you all so much for joining us. And I know normally I'd have all of you in studio, which makes the conversation and the panel a little bit easier. But I suppose I was surprised in one way to, and reading about it last week, to hear about the huge increase in online trolling and bullying. Like, I get that people have more time on their hands. Lots of people aren't working and spending more time on their phone during lockdown. But I don't know, I thought because we had seen such a huge coming together of community here in Ireland during lockdown, and then probably naively, I thought after the death of Caroline Flack and the campaign of goodness and the desire to change, which was all driven by the hashtag Be Kind, I thought that that was going to be a sea change. We were going to see a difference of the destructive nature of bullying and what we'd seen before, but clearly not.
No,
so Grace, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah, I thought the same, and it was everywhere. And we were all saying to ourselves, like, you have to think and remember that there's a person behind that screen, and what you see is a snippet of their life. And to just be a little bit more kind and think about it in the sense that that could be my sister, that could be my daughter. And how would you feel if someone was receiving that hate?
And you have 177,000 followers on Twitter, or on Instagram, sorry.
Yeah.
Was there a noticeable reduction, because you get crap all the time?
Yes.
Was there a noticeable reduction around that time or not?
Yeah, there was. Like, I really don't go looking for it because it affects me so much, and it affects my mental health that I have learned to just not read. But then sometimes it's hard if it's sent directly to me in DMs or emails, or if someone says, like, I'm sorry you're getting all of this hate at the moment, and I'm like oblivious to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't really want to know. And I say to my friends and family, whatever you read, just don't tell me, because I need to stay in my positive bubble. And my therapist has always told me, what people say about you behind your back is none of your business, which I think is true. And she always says, don't go looking. But sometimes you find yourself being a little bit like, I don't know
what
it is.
Well, there's a natural curiosity.
Yeah, exactly.
For all of us. Just bring us back a little bit, Grace, as to how, because you, this is your business now. Like,
yeah.
You, your brand is your business.
Yeah.
How did you go from working in Inglot, wasn't that, for a makeup company?
That was the last place I worked, yeah, was Inglot. So
how did you go from giving up your job to making a successful career online?
So I had started Faces by Grace when I was 23, and I kind of just set up a Facebook page, and Instagram wasn't even developed at the time. So when each platform was developed, I just kind of jumped on with the same handle. And I started on YouTube first, making videos, because there wasn't really many Irish doing it at the time. And I kept it anonymous. I didn't tell my friends or anything. And I moved to Australia, and I seen it really take off over here. So I said to myself, once I move home, I'll give it a go and we'll see. So I was kind of working full time and trying to do a full time as well. And I was just exhausted. And my mom said to me one day, like, what is it that you want to do? And I said, I want to work for myself. I want to do this. But she didn't really understand. Like, how can you make money from Instagram?
Being on your phone. Yeah.
Yeah. So then I kind of went part time in work and was giving it a go and giving more time and effort to it. And gradually it took over, and I was earning more money on my own than I was going into work. So I remember the conversation, my fiance Chris and my mom were just like, if you don't give it a go now, you'll never know. So give it 6 months. If it works, it works. If not, you have a degree you can fall back on. You're a makeup artist, whatever, just give it a go. So I remember it was the January and I left work and I decided to give it a go and found
out
the same.
And you haven't looked back since.
Well, I found out I was pregnant on Sienna and everything took off. So
okay.
It just, yeah, but it was a long slog before.
But to be able
before.
To have it, like, you've two kids, you've got your fiance, Chris. So to be able to work from home and do your own thing and be your own boss, it's an incredible. It's an incredible position to be in.
Yeah.
And you worked hard to get there. Julie, I'm going to come to you because Instagram it's not a job for you. You use it just for connection and for your social. So for people who don't know you, tell us a little bit about you and how you built up your following.
Hi, Catherine. Yeah, so about 2 years ago, I started my Instagram account. It's just basically because I'm a single mom to a set of twins, Erin, Rose and Fionn. And like in the evenings, I would be just sitting at home on my own and I'd have nobody coming in the door at 5 o'clock from work for me or, you know, any chat. So I said, you know what, I'm going to set up an Instagram account and just have the bit of a laugh and a bit of a crack just about being a single mom and share the good, the bad and the ugly of parenthood, I suppose. So the past probably year and a half, a bit longer, I got no grief. Now, I got the odd message of somebody giving their opinion, and that's fine. Everybody has their opinion. But lately, it's just all these fake accounts constantly like trolling me and just saying nasty, nasty stuff about my parenting. And I should, like, last week for example, I got a DM and they were saying you should go away and poison your children and they're better off up in the hospital where they'd get better care. And it's just absolute disgusting. Carry on.
And when you get those, obviously they're all anonymous accounts.
Yes.
So you can block them. They can still set up a new account and send messages into your DM.
Yes.
DMs. Something happened to you. People have contacted your employer as
yes.
well.
Yes. So they sent, in the past 2 weeks now, they've sent 3 emails to my employer. And my employer would also have a Facebook page. They've written such nasty stuff about me on their Facebook page. And also my dad, he has stage 4 cancer and he's receiving radium at the moment up in our Cork University Hospital here. And they have sent emails to my dad's doctor and treatment ward up there about us and about our family. It's absolutely disgusting, Catherine.
I mean, that's frightening that that level of trolling and bullying has moved from online to offline, you know, into reality like that.
Yes.
And how does that affect you privately?
Like
Judy,
like Grace, now I just said to my friends and family, please don't, if you're reading any of these threads, don't tell me what they're saying about me. I just don't want to know. And like when they did send those DMs now the past couple of weeks, I did read them. And of course, it knocked me for six, but I just had to get back up because, you know, I enjoy doing my Instagram. It's a bit of a crack and it's laugh and it's company for me, you know. But I worry, Catherine, for the person that's in a bad place and for somebody to send that DM to somebody that could be suffering really bad for the past couple of weeks with their mental health, and to open that message, that could send somebody over the edge, you know. It's really, really frightening.
And, you know, it's a double-edged sword, really, because by coming on and talking to today, can I ask both, were you nervous about coming in, Grace? Were you nervous about talking about it and addressing it?
Yeah, I was a little bit apprehensive and I had to just run it by Chris to see what he thought. And I thought to myself, it does need to be spoken about and I do need to address it. But I was nervous. And usually when I come in to do radio, it's positive and I'm excited. But today I had a little bit of an anxious knot in my tummy.
Well, because I suppose there's the argument that this is fueling exactly what the trolls want. But then on the other hand, as you said, by not addressing it and not pushing for change and for legislation or policies that will eventually hold somebody responsible, whether that's the individual, whether that's the social platforms themselves. Like, what do you think needs to happen to end this level of extremely personal harassment? And that's what's frightening. And this is for both of you. The fact that they're attacking your family and then going into your real life, if you like, and sending emails to your father, Julie, who's getting treatment in hospital. Like, that is...
Yeah, and I like coming on and I like sharing, Joe, the good and the bad about my dad's treatment and say, look, today he's really good and he's doing really, really well. And a lot of people that watch me then be like, oh, that's great that, you know, he has really good days. Again, he could have a bad day as well. And we do share that. But like, I just think it's absolutely awful that they emailed my dad's doctors. It's vile, like.
That's hard to believe that they would even go that far.
It's nothing got to do with my dad. Like, it's me behind my Instagram account. You know, my dad would pop on the odd time for a bit of a crack and a laugh. But like, to go that far to target my dad, that has nothing got to do with my Instagram account. It's just frightening.
And then, I mean, the other thing that I had no idea, like when I started out in TV 20 years ago, there was no social media, right? So the nastiness lived in these forums. And so when I wanted to go looking for horrific, nasty stuff, that's where you'd go. And I did not know that those still existed, those threads, those forums. And that's where a lot of this real nastiness, it's all still there and very personal as well.
And now that we have social media, there's so many different forms on them and they congregate together. And that's where it lies. They have these groups and pages and stuff like that where they can all say what they want anonymously. And like, I don't think they'd say it to our faces.
Yeah. No.
Paloma, I'm going to bring you in here. Because obviously there is more visibility and there's an increase in online trolling. Why is that?
I mean, trolling in reality has been existing for a long time. Trolling originally was this idea related of people using the internet searching for online freedom. It was associated with the origins of movements like Anonymous. And I think the term has morphed into this idea of dark beings behind the screens harassing and insulting just for fun. And the research, actually, I was listening to the girls now and talking about the nastiness. And it happens I came across this incredible research where they were testing or interviewing 1,200 people who openly were trolling. And this is a research from 2014. And it was extremely interesting because one of them, it's a psychology journal. And of all personalities measures, sadism showed the most robust association with trolling.
Sadism,
so we are basically talking, exactly. We are basically talking about sadistic behavior, people that actually are trolling just for fun. So there is this kind of cultural trend behind this behavior, which is tremendously worrying.
And I suppose for my understanding of it was Twitter was the place for trolling for a long time, and that's I set up Instagram purely for that reason, because I was like, okay, pictures of your days nice out things. And your dinners and your holidays and stuff like that. And whereas now it seems to be the platform, it's been bought by Facebook mm-hmm. as well. And am I right, Paloma, in saying, so with Facebook or girls, you'd probably be able to tell me, you have to provide your ID for a Facebook account, but you don't for an Instagram account. Is that right?
So it's very easy to
That's
set
correct.
Up.
Yeah, Facebook has a real identity policy. So every time you have to open an account, you have to show any form of official identity to prove that you are not under 13 or simply that is your real personality. You are the real you.
Yeah. So theoretically then Facebook in most cases could find out who these people are.
They could. They could. But the problem is how you report this. Once you receive all the trolling and all the you can block those comments, and you have your mechanisms in Instagram to do not receive this type of message. The problem is that you cannot prevent it. You can only report it once it has happened. So you can denounce a profile, and the profile might be taken down, but we are also talking about fake accounts and how people are creating fake accounts on Instagram, which is actually true. I actually don't know if Facebook monitors how people logging on Instagram and how they create the profiles. But I reckon the last time I checked, they definitely didn't check the ID for Instagram. They did for Facebook.
Because they do have the algorithms that catch like hate speech on Facebook.
But it's very easy on Instagram, because I said to Chris recently, how did the people have the time to set up a fake page? Because when I joined Instagram, it was a long process and you had to fill out lots of online information about yourself. And then he said, Grace, it's a click of a button and you can set it up. You just have a name and an email and there you go. So each time you block a fake account, they can just make another one and another one and another one. And that's like, I just don't understand why people do that and why they, I don't know, like why they sit at home and spend their time doing that when they could be out doing something nice for themselves or watching a nice movie or just...
And in terms, Grace, for you, have you ever had that sit down with Chris and your family going, I'm done with this, I'm over it, I'm throwing the towel in, I would rather go back to doing what I was doing so I didn't have to put up with this?
Yeah, a lot of the time when I get a lot of hate or if I read a message, like I have an instant sickness in my tummy, like I have that kind of fear and I cry and we talk about it, and it might be a day or two where I'm like, it's not worth it. Like, why do I put myself out there? I was just a normal girl who sat in her bedroom and filmed herself and it took off. And I never expected to be self-employed and working for myself. But then like a day later, I think to myself, like, this is like the dream job. I get to work for myself. I get to work with brands I love. I get to stay at home with my kids. I get great opportunities and I'm not going to let them win. I'm not going to dwell on it, even though in the moment it's very hard to talk yourself out of it. Like, I could show him a message and it really affects him as well, because he worries for me what people are saying. So there's some days where I'm like, it's not worth it throwing it in, and then other times I'm like, Grace, you have been doing this nearly 10 years, you need to just accept the fact that sometimes you're not going to be everyone's cup of tea, and just try and avoid going to these pages, going to these forums, which I have done over the last 2 years. But you can't stop people all the time.
This is a big question, and it's probably one for way in the future, but have you thought about your own children, how you would feel about them having Instagram? It's one of those things. It's like we move on 5 years, we move on 10 years.
Yeah.
Not allowing them to have what everybody else has in terms of where society is going. Julie, have you thought about that yourself?
I do. I always think of it actually, Catherine. And I suppose, like, to answer that, for one bad message, you might get 20 lovely ones, you know? So there's way more good in the world than bad, I suppose, you know? But when they're bad, they're vicious altogether.
What do you think needs to be done, Julie, in terms of either by the social media companies or the government to combat this?
I think they should bring in that law and all also, I think, like that, setting up an Instagram account, you'll have to send on a picture of your passport or a driver's license just to verify who you are.
Mm. What about you, Grace?
Yeah, I think the process to sign up to an account should be made a lot harder. And obviously, you have to be that person and not just Mary 523, because that's what the profile is. It's generally just no picture, no post, a random name. You have to be who you say you are.
And Paloma, I'm going to ask you, because there is a mob mentality behind it. You know, when you're talking about groups, what you're doing is you're giving trolls the safety net they need to do what they do and feed off other people as well.
You see, I'm very though. I actually doubt about this idea of a mob mentality. Because at the end of the day, you do have people independently who are trolling. I think that, unfortunately, with open public profile, it comes the price of being trolled, as it has become a culture. And social media, to understand, protect will be a strong word, but social media, to understand, allow this to happen as you are on charge of your own safety. Mm. You have to block people, you have to control who is seeing your account, you have to control who you see as well. So mob mentality, I have been digging into the idea and I cannot find anything substantial from a research point of view that says that this is feeding a mob mentality.
Mm. Well, I don't know, like if you think of, and going back to Caroline Flack, and I, you know, I do so because it was the most recent incident, and there has been many, but you look at the harassment, that was harassment by the press as well as online.
Yeah.
And then you could go back and you say, look at, you know, Princess Diana, and that was endless harassment from one platform, if you like, which was the press. But again, that feeds into mob mentality. If it's that sort of viral, what you're doing is you're creating momentum for that mob mentality. Do you know what I mean, Paloma?
I do. I see what you mean. I suppose I'm using different concepts here, because one thing starts with trolling, this idea of somebody or a group of people who, for sadistic or personal reasons, are attacking profiles. And another thing is when it passes and abandons the platform and actually moved offline. That is bullying by the book, and that's harassment by the book. Mm. So we cannot keep talking about social media or mob mentality in platforms. We are talking about something more severe. Mm. So you see, it's interesting, and I think it's important to keep those notions separated as well.
Mm. Well, look, Julie, can I ask you, how is your dad doing, by the way?
He's doing very well, really, really well. And I've obviously sat down and I spoke to him about it, because I'm nervous the next time he goes up for his treatment, the doctors might say something to him. But he said, Julie, do you know what? Just ignore them and do not go onto these treads and just do not give in to them, you know, because he knows I enjoy what I do. And as he said, Julie, just ignore them. And you know what, Catherine? I probably sound a bit silly for saying this, but I feel sorry for them, because I often had one of the girls calling to me there, and she might have a bit of a rant about her boyfriend or the husband, and she might sit down for a cup of tea for an hour, and when she leaves, I'd be like, oh God, I actually have a pain in my head, you know, over listening to the rant. How these people sit down for hours upon hours every single day and just full of negativity. It's just, I really generally worry for them as well. Mm. Do you know?
It's shocking.
It's shocking.
So you're going to continue your page, Julie, by that set. Like you've never got to the stage where it would impact you that much that you'd close it down.
No, as I said, Catherine, I'm in a very good place, but I do worry for somebody that's not in a good place, and to receive messages and trolling like that, it could really, really tip somebody over the edge. And I am really worried for that person.
And, you know, that's why I think it is important that we talk about it. And I think it is important that people who maybe aren't that abreast on social media understand that this is what's happening. We need to put it out there. We need people to understand the severity of what's happening and the personal attacks through direct messaging as well. So Grace Mongey and Julie Haynes, and also to you, Paloma, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Anish Toshe and I'm the Priyash Kailton and Anuakdal and Marian Nihulawan. Marian, welcome back. We are still getting lots of texts in about pizzas, and I've actually made a note of a couple of these ones. This one I'm going to give a go. Goat's cheese, walnut and apricot It's heaven, says Lorraine Brown in Cork. And yeah, I am a fan of apricots. I'm a fan of apricots wrapped in bacon. Has anyone done that? It's pretty nice as well. Cheese, Spanish ham and egg is the best pizza ever. And then this is like pizza question mark. Put your cornflakes and sliced banana in a bowl and with the milk. Wait till it gets soggy. Then put it on a slice of toast with butter and enjoy with a cup of tea. Breakfast pizza. No, let's leave it there. All right, it is time for the All-Ireland quiz. Have we got our jingle? We do. We have our jingle. Fabulous. And today it is Cavan versus Wicklow. And on the line we have Patricia Monaghan representing Cavan and we have Lorraine Bailey representing Wicklow. Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Catherine.
How are things? Patricia, you're in Cavan. What's going on there today?
Not a lot, actually. Not a lot. I was just outside washing my camper ready for off next week.
Oh, exciting.
Yeah.
I was actually having an old nose out for camper vans. They're hard to get. Yeah. So how long have you had a camper van?
About 6 years.
Okay. And where are you heading off to?
I'm going to Achill.
Oh, lovely. Oh, my God. What? And is everyone going as well? I know you've got three daughters, two sons.
I have two daughters and two daughters coming with me.
With you. Fabulous.
Two grandchildren and a son-in-law.
Two daughters, two grandchildren, a son-in-law and yourself and the husband.
Yeah.
How big is the van?
Oh, no, they are camping.
Oh, OK. That's good. Jeez. Yeah. I thought fair play to you taking on all
camping,
that.
Yeah.
And where's the furthest you've gone in the camper van?
Surrey.
OK. Because my dad got one last year and he has great plans now. They're out travelling at the moment. I don't actually don't know where they are, but he has great plans to head off to Europe and everything else. It's brilliant. And I love the idea of it. Anyway, you're going to have a fabulous time and you might have a better time if we can get you through to the next round. Lorraine Bailey in Wicklow, how are you?
Catherine, how are you?
I am fine, not a bother. So what's going on in Wicklow today and who's listening with you?
I'm not in Wicklow, I'm in Navan.
You're
I'm
in
not
Navan?
Too far away from Catherine.
Oh. Okay, you're in Navan. What has you in Navan?
This is where we live now, but I'm Wicklow born.
Oh, you're from Wicklow. Yeah. I get you, I'm with you. Yeah. And your son loves the quiz apparently. Is that Connor
Absolutely.
Or Finn?
It's Connor.
Okay.
Yeah. So and again, they're upstairs banging on the ceiling.
Oh, okay. So they're wishing you the best of luck in the world.
But Roisin will be very disappointed if you don't say her name as well.
Roisin, great to have you and great support for Mom. What's your plans for the next couple of days or weeks, Lorraine?
Have you listening to the camper van? We did our honeymoon in a camper van, so we love camper vans, but we don't have one. And like you said, Catherine, it's very hard to get them at the moment.
Hard to get.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're going to play it by ear, see what happens over the next while, is it?
Well, we're going to Wexford to an apartment the last week in July. So
lovely.
For my husband's 40th.
Oh, fab. Oh, that's right. I was chatting to you before. You were meant to be in Italy. Isn't that right at some point?
Yeah, we won't talk about it.
We won't talk about it. Well, did you hear my reasons for not going away at the top of the show? If you did, well, maybe listen back. There was like reasons.
I did, yeah.
It wasn't very convincing, but there
no,
you go.
No, they were a threat, though.
Okay, well, listen, Patricia, have we got your motivation song of the day is...
Stop the world and let me off.
The brilliant Declan Nerney there. Okay, so he's going to bring it home for you, Patricia. And Lorraine, what's your song?
Stop going, especially for the kids with their toys.
There we go. Turn it up now so they can dance.
They're dancing, I can hear them. I'll be riding
shotgun underneath the hot sun. Okay, all right. That means everybody is ready to go. Patricia, I'm going to start with you. Here is question number one. What is the second longest river in Ireland? Is it the Barrow or the Slaney? Need an answer?
Slaney.
Is the wrong answer, Patricia. It is the Barrow. Down my neck of the woods in Carlow, 192 kilometres is the Barrow. Lorraine, over to you. How long is the term of an Irish president? 4 years or 7 years?
Seven.
is the right answer. Okay, Patricia, back to you. This is your audio question. Name the movie that this song comes from.
It's a hard knock life for us. It's a hard knock life for us. No one cares for you on stage when you're in an art page. It's a hard knock life.
There you go. Yes, Patricia, well done. Right answer. Back to you, Lorraine. This is your audio question. Name the movie that this song comes from.
I'm hopelessly devoted to you. But now there's nowhere to hide since you pushed my love aside.
Oh, God, love that. What was that, Lorraine?
We're still on our age, Catherine. Greece.
Greece is the right answer. We certainly are. But sure, when it's that cheesy and that good, it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Patricia, back to you. What is the former name of the country now known as the Democratic Republic of the Congo?
Oh.
Need an answer, Patricia?
I don't know.
Zaire is the answer there. Hard luck. Okay, so you're still on 1 point. Don't worry. Lorraine, coming to you. What is the former name of the country now known as Zimbabwe? Need an answer?
Rhodesia.
Rhodesia is the right answer. Lorraine. Well done. All right.
We lived in South Africa. I would have been in so much trouble if I didn't remember that.
That was the brain firing on all cylinders there. Brilliant stuff. Okay, 3 points. Patricia, you are on 1 point. Back to our audio questions. Name this singer. All right, name that singer, Patricia.
Holly Murs.
Is the right answer. Good woman, you're back in the game. Over to you, Lorraine. You need to name this singer. All right, Lorraine, you're singing away there.
Taylor Swift
is the right answer. You see, we can keep up with the young ones as well. So 4 points to you, Patricia. You are on 2 points, which means that you, Patricia, are going to have to go for the 3-point question in order to stay in the game. Okay?
Okay.
Here it is. Which of these counties won a senior football All-Ireland first? Meath, Down, Mayo or Offaly?
Meath, Down, Offaly.
Need an answer, Patricia. Sorry. Need an answer.
Mayo.
Mayo is the right answer. Woo! Okay, you are still in the game. That means you have a total of 5 points, Patricia. Lorraine, you can go for the 1 point question, which will have you both on a tie to get you the tiebreaker, or you go for it, hell for leather, 3 points to take the win.
Go on, the three-pointer.
Three-pointer, okay. If you get this wrong, Patricia has won, all right?
Yep.
Which of these world cities has the biggest population? Seoul, Chicago, Hong Kong, or Baghdad? The biggest population.
Soul.
Is the right answer. We have a winner. We took our time, ladies, but we got there in the end. Absolutely brilliant. Well done, Lorraine,
well
representing
done.
Wicklow. You are through to the next round. Patricia, hard luck, and you did it. You gave a gallant comeback as well, Patricia, it has to be said. Representing Cavan, there is a Ray Darcy mug on its way to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking part and for being such a good player over the last couple of weeks as well.
Safe travels, Patricia. Thanks very much and congratulations, Ray.
Enjoy the camper van. Make sure they give you some breathing space, Patricia. You need time and space by the sound of the whole crowd coming with you. And Lorraine, best of luck. I hope you get a holiday at some point in the coming weeks.
Will. Yeah, we will, Catherine.
Yay, everyone's excited there in the house.
Yeah. They are, Catherine.
Lovely.
Thanks a million.
All right, you're into the semi-final. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, semi-final, guys.
Semi-final. You'll have to think of another theme tune now, lads.
Okay, I'll put them on it.
All right, listen, enjoy the rest of the day. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Catherine. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
You can keep your text coming in to 51551. Your emails to ray@rte.ie. In just a minute, I'm going to be talking to our dog expert. That's Samantha Rawson. And I'm going to kick off because we've had a couple of texts and emails in. People returning to work, going back to the office after lockdown and how their dogs are finding that transition quite difficult, some of them. So if you have any other doggy queries, get them in. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. I played Rag and Bone Man at the top of the show and somebody has texted in, check out the YouTube duet him and Gregory Porter did singing Bring It On Home to Me on Jules Holland Hootenanny. That comes in from Dorothy in Blackrock. I'm definitely going to check that out. I'm a massive fan of Gregory Porter as well. But for now, why don't we do a little bit of Adele? That is the fabulous Adele there, who recently got, did you see the photos of her online? She dropped about 7 stone. Definitely not by eating some of the pizza combos that are still coming in here. Cheese, apricot, banana, smoked salmon, cornflakes. Lads, it's coming thick and strong. Now, our dog expert, Samantha Rawson, joins me on the line to discuss all our doggy related queries. Samantha, how are you doing?
I'm well, thank you, Catherine.
Good.
How are you?
Good, yeah, good to chat to you again. It's been a little while.
Indeed.
How are you keeping and doing through lockdown and the lifting of lockdown, as they say?
Well, with 8 dogs to look after, I've been busy, but it's been great. It's been a welcome break, I have to say.
Okay, good. Well, let's start by talking about anxious dogs when people return to work. And I was saying during the week or last week that the dogs really have benefited most from us being around them and the constant companionship. Mm. And now it's a struggle for people and a struggle for dogs to have a quiet house again.
Yeah, I suppose the first place to start for me is kind of at the end, but also at the beginning, in that the thing I'm looking for at the end is where I actually start, in that what I'm looking for is for a dog to be quite happy in my company, but being ignored. So that a dog that can settle in a room with you, just sleep on its bed, chewy, chill out while you're busy working on the computer.
Mm.
And that, you know, when you walk around the house, you go to the loo or go outside or whatever, that it doesn't get upset.
Mm.
So that's where I start. And really what I mean by that is that if the dog is getting attention and, you know, you're giving it some snuggy buggies, as I call it, that when you're finished, you let the dog know that the interaction is over. So I always kind of talk to owners about social manners and kind of say to people that if you're on the phone, you kind of let people know that the conversation is coming to an end. You don't just hang up. And likewise with the dog, that if you're giving it attention, you've got to let it know that this attention is now over.
Mm.
You don't just walk off because you're distracted by something. Because if you do, the dog will then demand more attention because it hasn't quite got the message that this interaction is finished.
Mm.
So I always talk about letting the dog know that the interaction is over by giving them some visual signals and then an audible signal. So I will kind of say to a dog, that's enough. I'll fold my arms, look away. So you must break eye contact and look at the ceiling and completely and utterly blank the dog.
Okay.
So the dog knows we're done.
And once you have those strategies in place, obviously when you come in the door as well, I think I remember you saying that you come in the door and you make sure you put your keys down, whatever else, and then have your time with your dog, that they're not jumping all over you from the minute they arrive in.
But I suppose the important...
Which I'm going to hold my hand up, mine do.
Okay, the important point for me, Catherine, is that the dogs shouldn't have access to the area where you come and go out of the house. Because if the dog can see you leave, it's a bit of a daily heartbreak. Mm. Then likewise, that when you come back in, if the dogs meet you in the hall, then you can't control that excitement. Obviously, the dog is going to be excited. You'd almost be upset if the dog wasn't excited. You know? So,
for me, it depends what colour clothes I'm wearing. Right. If I'm wearing black clothes, yeah. I don't want them coming near me.
Okay,
if
so exactly. So you as the owner, it's up to you to manage where your dogs are at that greeting and also departure. Mm. So I don't like dogs to see me leave. So I would always have a dog behind a solid door or somewhere else so that they don't physically see me leave and they don't physically see me arrive. Mm. That I walk into the room where they are. And that cuts down an awful lot of behaviour problems, as in separation issues or like that, the dog jumping on me when I've got clean clothes on.
Mm. There were a lot of people that got dogs, rescue dogs, during the lockdown for companionship or foster dogs.
Yeah.
And again, building and developing relationships like that. And I know what you're saying is that you have to put the work in early. But for people who didn't and say now have a crying dog, which is an issue for people because the dog all of a sudden is on its own again.
Yeah.
What advice could you give there?
OK, well, there's two issues there, Catherine, in that rescue dogs require a totally different approach than your puppy that you have had from 8 weeks and that you've almost created this problem, you know, unwittingly, obviously, you haven't done it deliberately. But rescue dogs invariably come out of rescue shelters with separation anxiety or separation-related issues because they have originally lost their original home. Do you know what I mean? They've already suffered a loss. So dogs from rescue shelters, kind of, it's a prerequisite almost that if you get a dog from a rescue shelter, it's going to come with separation-related issues. If you have a dog that you've had from a puppy, well, then it's up to you to train that dog that it can't follow you around the house, that you want it to be independent. And you've got to do that by giving it security and safety and occupying it when it's not with you, by giving it a chewy or a toy with some food in it or whatever. So the first thing I would say is that you've got to get your dog used to being ignored while you're in the room. So, you know, let it occupy itself while you're in the room. And then as you walk out of the room, that you don't allow the dog to follow you around the house. So it gets used to very short absences. So when you get up to go to the loo, you're only gone for like 5 minutes. You come back, the dog learns it's no big deal.
Okay.
And you gradually increase that. With a rescue dog, it's different in that it is already an established behaviour. So they kind of need, you know, they would need a behaviour consultation. I can't really give advice for dogs that are already suffering separation issues.
Mm, okay. More texts coming in here. I have a long-haired Dachshund who for no apparent reason starts howling like a wolf howls at the moon.
Okay.
It happens about every second day. No pattern to it. Why is this?
Okay. Right. There's two things there. Dachshunds are vocal animals. They're earth dogs. They are bred to go to ground to pursue badgers and stuff. I don't know. Badgers might be bigger than a Dachshund. I don't know if badgers is quite the animal they were bred to go after, but they're earth dogs, so they are vocal because you need to be able to indicate where the dog is when they're on the ground if you can't see them.
Yes.
So they're vocal. So Dachshunds are very vocal dogs, which people don't realise. He has also said that there isn't a pattern to it, but she has just said that it's every second day. So there is a pattern to it. So I would try and pin that down a bit more and see if there's anything in the environment that is triggering the dog. Dachshunds have very sensitive hearing, so the dog could be hearing something that the owner's not hearing.
So that
would require investigation. But, you know, the great thing about behaviour is that if you have the time to study it and kind of make notes every time something happens and kind of what happened beforehand and what happened afterwards.
Okay.
There usually is an identifiable pattern.
Okay. We have a 9-year-old rescue male Westie who insists on peeing in the house at nighttime 90% of the time in spite of being let out regularly. Any suggestions on how we can encourage him out of this, please? We've put down puppy pads to save the floor, but now we're afraid to take them up. Any help would be much appreciated.
I would look at what he's fed. I would also see if the dog has water at nighttime, because if the dog is eating dry food and then also drinking a lot of water, that will obviously relate to peeing. So maybe, you know, bring back the feeding time in the evening and also look at the diet and see how much access to water the dog has. If you reckon it's none of those things, a 9-year-old Westie is the beginning of an old dog.
Mm.
In medical terms, they would consider a 9-year-old a veteran. So that might be the beginning of physical problems. So if it's an ongoing situation, I would really get the dog checked over by the vet just to make sure that there's nothing physically going on before I pursue a behavioural route.
Okay, and very quickly, if you can help Rachel, my mother has a female neuter dog and she is humping cushions. Is it only male behaviour?
Well, humping is a pastime. You know, so yes.
What have you written to yourself, Samantha?
Females do hump. It's not exclusively a male behaviour. So females do hump. And also sometimes when they're neutered, their hormones get a little bit mixed up.
In fact, I have two dogs, both neutered, Peter and Poppy, and she always humps him, and it's not the other way around.
Right, right. Yeah. So that could be an exercise in kind of just one-upmanship. Do you know what I mean? And also a bit of crack. So humping isn't always a sexual behaviour. It can sometimes be self-amusement, and then, of course, the owner reacts to it, so it can become attention-seeking behaviour. But it's not exclusively male, you know, but dogs that are neutered can sometimes get a little bit mixed up.
Okay. And on that note, I think we should leave it there. Samantha Rustin, as usual, thank you so much for chatting to me this afternoon. That is all from me today. Ray is back tomorrow. Mary Wilson is next on Drive Time. Thanks for keeping me company over the last week, guys, this week and last week. And enjoy the next couple of weeks. And I will be back with you guys in August.